Hi, welcome to Creative Coding for JavaScript Windows 8 Applications. This series is going to focus on processing JS, using that as our rendering library to get us introduced into the theory and concept behind interactive coding. Now, these types of applications are a little bit different from traditional software design. They are geared more at the creative arts, for design engineers, design technologists. A lot of people are finding processing a common language to get into learning some fundamental concepts of programming, because it allows us to very quickly understand for loops in a visual context. It provides us quick visual feedback. It's becoming very popular. In Windows 8, it's easy to actually plug it into a JavaScript-based application. So this series, that's what it's focused on. This first video is the setup video. So I'm going to show you how my environment is set up. And once we do that, I'll introduce you to the basic structure of a processing sketch, and the rest of the series will then take you down the rabbit hole into the world of creative coding, so you can learn things such as easing, particle effects, such as that. But this first video, let's set up our environment, and then let's get introduced to the basically processing 101, the most simple introduction of processing. After this, the next videos will really get you up to speed very quickly. So let's look at what my environment looks like. So in this particular application, I created a very simple processing JavaScript viewer. It's spawned off of one of the Windows 8 templates. If you open up Visual Studio 2012, we'll find it comes automatically with the default HTML. Now in this default HTML, the only change that I did is I'm making a reference to our modified processing JS file, which you'll download from the processing JS website. I made a couple tweaks to reference MS Pointer, which is not currently supported in processing.js. And when we get to the pointer video, we'll dive deep into what those changes actually were and how to get multi-touch working great on Windows 8. But for basically, for this video, download processing.js, throw it into your JavaScript folder, and put a reference to it on your main page. I stripped everything else out, basically, from the body, except for I've put in a canvas element. Processing JavaScript is expecting you to throw a reference to a canvas that you have, and it'll then take over that canvas and start doing all of its processing rendering off of the canvas. So we're creating this canvas that we'll be sending to it shortly. I've given it the idea of canvas root. So if we look at what this page does, what this default HTML page does in its JavaScript when it loads, is it's pretty simple. This is all, again, cookie cutter on activated event handling for any JavaScript application you do in Windows 8. The one thing I do want to call out, and again, here we are on the app unactivated, is I created two variables, one for canvas and one called local sketch. A sketch is what you call your file in processing. So if you start looking online for processing.js samples, they'll usually call them sketches. It is just a text file, and I have my sketch, let me bring that up so you can see it. So I have a file right here on my machine called sketch.pde. It's a completely empty file for right now. This is what we'll be using. What we draw here, we'll be writing this in the processing language. And once we're done creating a sketch here, when our default HTML first loads up, first gets activated, we simply wired it up with a couple lines of code. Here's where we're getting a JavaScript reference to the canvas that we put on the screen. Again, this is typical, very common JavaScript. We're doing a document get element by, referencing the canvas root that we dropped in, bare bones canvas. Now at this point, we're finding the path to our text file, our processing sketch, our sketch PDE. We're using an asynchronous call to load up that text file. And once that text file is loaded, using Windows storage, the file IO read text async. Once that file is loaded and this function is called, these are the two lines of code that do all the work. We're giving that text file to our processing object that we are referencing through processing JS. We're saying compile this text file into a sketch. Processing will go ahead and compile that. It'll throw an error if it's not properly formatted processing, of course. Once it's compiled into a sketch, we then create a new instance of this by saying, here's the canvas, here's the JavaScript reference to a canvas, and here's your sketch that you just compiled. Marry the two of them together. So these two lines of code is all it really takes to get processing.js running on your Windows 8 application with this simple structure. So again, if you're coming from JavaScript and you need a processing, this should be very simple, should completely make sense. If you're coming from processing and you need a Visual Studio, well, that's why we have the template. But it can also, it's also a good introduction to learning JavaScript for Windows 8 applications in general. So this viewer is kind of this hybrid of Windows 8 specific JavaScript applications, being able to load up a processing sketch and throwing it onto the screen. So that's all it really took to set up the environment. Let's now switch gears and talk about processing as a design language for creative professionals. Processing has really grown in popularity, right? Khan Academy is using it online, Processing.js to teach an introduction of programming to young children. It really is a very accessible language, and it is very, very powerful. Now, processing proper started off in the Java-based world, but Processing.js for the web has really, really grown in popularity. Anybody with a browser, basically, you can start downloading it right away. It's a very fast, easy language to get up to speed in learning programming concepts because it provides this visual feedback. When I was teaching programming and math for designers, things such as Flash, Silverlight, Processing, these are great languages to use because it gets them to understand concepts such as for loops and update events in something that gives them very quick visual feedback. So this entire series will be delivered this way. So let's jump straight into what a processing sketch looks like, how it works, and get something on the screen and moving it around. Then I have my Sketch PDE up here. I'm kind of stop everything, open up my Sketch PDE. Processing, it makes it very simple because basically you create a setup function. If we wanted to color the background, I would simply say background, and I'd give it a color. In this case, I'm going to, let's say we want to make it red. This is straight RGB. We're creating a color. It's getting thrown to the background, and we should be good to go. If I run this, we should see that our canvas has now been painted red. Now, you might have noticed in the CSS and in the HTML, I didn't give the canvas any width or height properties. As soon as processing takes over that canvas, we can do it all in processing. So let's make our main stage, our canvas, a little bit bigger. We're going to do size 1200 by 600. And we refresh. And we'll see that we can dynamically change the size of that canvas to whatever we've defined in processing here. So now we have a nice big sketch pad to start creating on. Now, it's a good programming habit, and it'll come in value very shortly, to start storing some of these numbers into variables. So I'm going to use an integer. I'll do int width height. Let me also do background color. Whoops. We'll do color, and we'll do BKG color, and we'll define that. So when setup gets called, let's go ahead and say width is equal to 1200, height is equal to 600, and we'll do BKG color. Whoops. Is equal to, at this point, let's start making it, let's make it a nicer gray. So let's say 200, 200, 200. Now, by defining them in variables, we can start using them in multiple places. So saying width and height, and our background, we want to color it with our background color. So at this point, if I run it, if I refresh it, the only thing visually that we'll see is that it will be changing background color. At this point, we've made it to a light gray. Good. Now let's start drawing elements. If I just go ahead and if I do, let's say we want to draw an ellipse. So there's an ellipse function that lets you draw an ellipse. Now we want to draw a circle, and a circle is simply an ellipse that has the up and down radius and the left and right radius the exact same size. An ellipse could actually be used to draw kind of, you know, short, squat circles, however you want to do it. But if you want to draw a circle, an ellipse requires a couple inputs. We want to tell it where we want to put it, you know, its x value and its y value, and then how big we want the radii to be. So we want to do an ellipse, and if we want to put it in the middle of the screen, And we might change the value later, so that's why you want to reference the variable. So if we say, put it in the middle of the screen, which is half the width. If our width is 1200, it'll put it at 600x. Put the middle of the ellipse halfway down the screen, so whatever our height is, cut it in half. And for us, we'll give it a radius of, say, 100 and 100. Now, if I refresh this, let's see what happens. There we go. We see that it's created a circle. Now, since our background is light, it chose a default fill color of white. If we wanted to change that color, we don't put that property here. In some languages, you might put it in there. You'd say, hey, draw an ellipse this color in these positions. The way processing handles it is you define what its fill color is. So you're going to say, I'm going to create a variable up here called fill color. And over here, I'll define my fill color as a nice bright red. I'll also go ahead and darken up our sketch background color. And once I have this fill color, I'll say fill color. If you're new to coding, if you're new to processing, let's kind of really make sure what's going on here. We're creating these variables up here, which we'll be able to reference anytime we want and multiple times. Because if I wanted to change the width of my sketch now to say 1600, I only have to change it in one spot. This is the value of storing it in a variable. I can change it here, and all of my calculations are done off the variable. It'll instantly now position my circle at 800 instead of 600 when my width was 1200 pixels. So we've introduced this concept of variables. We've introduced how we work with color, including drawing the background and creating colors. And the difference between coloring the background and setting up the fill when you're drawing a geometry, such as an ellipse or a rectangle or a polygon. So if I refresh this, we should now see a red circle. There we go. There is a stroke on there. The stroke is this outline around the fill. It's very small, but it's there if you can see it. If you want it, or not, you can go ahead and take that off by defining no stroke or whatever. But we'll just go ahead and leave it on for right now. We'll see in some of our sketches later that we go ahead and take that off. And if you want to do a stroke color versus a fill color, those are other different things. But let's kind of ease our way into this. Now, we've put something on screen, right? This is kind of the hello world for visual designers. How do I put something on screen? But really, your first introduction to any creative language, it's actually two things. It's how do I put something on screen, and then how do I move it around? This setup function is only being called once when things get set up. When that processing takes your sketch and it marries it to that canvas, it will call this function once. That's why it's called setup. But virtually all rendering techniques, you have two different things. You have your setup function, and then you'll have a draw function. And this draw function, or it might be called update in some languages, right? This draw function is off of a timer that will constantly be called. Processing takes care of wiring up all the events in the background. So if we simply define a draw function, we do void draw, processing is going to go ahead and call this draw function around 60 times every second. This is the engine that will start animating everything. Setup is called once, draws things to the screen. Draw function is the thing that you want to use to move things around. Now, as you get more advanced into other languages, sometimes they separate this out into an update function to handle the math, and then the draw function to handle the rendering. But processing, again, simple introduction, easy to get up to speed very quickly. All you really need is setup, which is called once, and this draw function, which is called again and again. So let's move our drawing down into our draw function and start taking advantage of this animation engine. So I'm going to move background down here. I'm going to move ellipse down here. If I simply refresh this, visually nothing seems to be different from what we've been doing. There's still a circle. The difference is what we were looking at before. It painted the background once and drew the circle once and then didn't update anything. It is now constantly drawing the background and constantly drawing the circle 60 times a second. Now that we have this set up, we can start animating this and everything should work out just right. The easiest way to animate this is to start looking at our math. I'm going to create a new variable up here And this is going to store the position of where we want the circle to be. So I'm going to create an integer, which will be x and y. Now, we've been doing the calculation down here. There we go. I'm doing it down here. We've been doing the math kind of real time here. Let's go ahead and push that out into our x and y variables. So when we start off, I want the x to be in the middle of the screen horizontally, and I want the y to be in the middle of the screen vertically, which is what that's giving us. When I draw my ellipse, I can now say x and y. Hopefully you guys are with me here. Now, since this draw function is called all the time, we introduce animation by simply doing that. Whatever x is, let's start adding a value to it, and let's see what happens. If we refresh this now, we can see that draw is being called constantly because we have x, and we now have something that's alive with motion. The circle is starting to move across the screen because x is constantly getting updated to add 1 to its current position. The problem is once it goes off the screen, it's gone. So let's start adding some bouncing. Let's start adding some boundary checks and some velocity to this. One other thing we want to do is that speed, 1, we could make it faster by changing this variable here from 1 to, say, 4. This will now move every time the draw function is called 60 times a second, it'll now add 4 pixels instead of 1 pixel. If we were to simply run this, we'd see that the circle takes off the screen much faster, right? It's now going much faster, 4 pixels a second. We don't want to get into the habit, and it's very common when creatives start coding, of putting in a lot of magic numbers. I've been very guilty of this myself, but it's good practice to always be wrapping these up into variables and then referencing the variables so that when you change it once, you kind of know what it is and it's given a name. So let's actually come up and set up those variables over here. Okay. So I'm going to create an int called x speed and an int called y speed. I'm going to say x speed down here, we'll say it's 2, y speed down here is equal to 2, and when we come down over here, we'll say x is plus equal to, and again, plus equal to is the same thing as if we said x is equal to x plus 4. Right? That's just basic programming there. So x is plus equal to x speed. Y is y equal to y speed. This is our animation loop. So whatever we defined up here is going to be added to our variables every time the animation engine is run here. And that means that the next time we draw, these values will now be changed. If we run this again, we're now going to have the circle move diagonal down. We still don't have any boundary checking. Okay, so let's now go back and add our boundary checking. Let's stop this. And here's basically what our boundary checking. We start to see the value of having this width and height previously defined. We can say, hey, if x is greater than our width, basically say push it back. But more importantly, change what x speed is. Let's look at this for a second. If x speed is positive 4, you'll be moving your x, right, toward the edge of the screen. When it hits the boundary that you want, you actually want to start having it go the other way. To go the other way, you're going to have to be adding a negative number to it, right? So this is how you invert the speed of something. Just multiply it by negative 1. If it's positive 4, it'll go to negative 4. If it's negative 4, it'll go back to positive 4, right? So we can say if x is less than 0, well, let's put it back at 0. And again, tell x speed to invert itself. We do the same thing for our height. if height is great, if our y value is greater than height, then put it back and then invert its speed. I'm sure you guys can see this. And the same thing for the other boundary. If it's less than zero, put it back and invert its speed. Hopefully you guys are following along. If you're looking at this, this is an introduction to straight boundary checking. All right, this can get much more advanced, but at this point, this is how it is. So if we go ahead and run this, we're now going to see that circle is going to go down. Our y gets lower than the height, so its y gets inverted. Comes over here, its x passes its boundary, gets inverted, and it keeps moving around. So we're seeing this code in effect, what boundary checking looks like, what velocity looks like, adding it to these variables and iterating it around. At this point, this is an introduction to the processing sketch. Our next sketches start getting more advanced much more quickly. Again, feel free to hit us up online or at Twitter. If you have your questions, feel free to, we're always here to answer it. But this series is going to take you through this introduction of creative coding from the hello world example that we see here, a circle bouncing around, to hopefully some really cool effects using processing JS and the Windows 8 application environment. So please feel free to move on to the next video and start increasing your creative coding skills. Thanks again.